Mr. James Vaughn, and he has been a fisherman here in Westport as long as he lived here, and then up on the Cape before he moved to Westport. He has a very interesting story to tell. I'm Mary Giles, and I hope I can do a good job of getting that story out of him.
Well, December 9th, 1975, to Mrs. Giles, in answer to her interview asked for by her to record for posterity about fishing in Westport, Mass. Around 1900, the causeway between Horsneck Beach and Gooseberry Neck was filled in, and a roadbed was established. This was the worst thing that could have happened to Westport as related to their fishing interests, which was concerned. Due to the fact that the so-called Let on the east north side of the East Branch Road had been blocked up by the storm of 1889 or 98 or previous, and there had been established a roadbed from the foot of Horsneck Road westward to the south terminal of Horsneck Beach. This so-called opening in the Let compares to the opening of Richmond, Allen, or Clixon Ponds, and also Corky's Pond, which used to open and close on the ocean side of the pond. When Atlantic Avenue was made into a road, the outlet to Corky's Pond was a brook north of the present ditch at Wilbur Smith's. Anyone doubting that the Let so-called was not open to Westport River, let them dig a hole on the east side of Farley Lane, about where Charles Soule had his restaurant, and they will find, as I did in 1926, that this land contains a layer of gravel, a layer of marsh, and a layer of gravel, a layer of marsh, and so on until they cannot dig any deeper, proving that the tide used to rise and fall in this area. Now, whereas all the waterways had been blocked off, it is now necessary for all fish that are migrating to the west to go outside of Gooseberry Neck, and they are so far from the mouth of the harbor that they never get back so that they can get into the harbor. Also, the amount of scallop and quahog seed coming up from the Cape and the islands just simply washes up on shore, and that's the end of that. When John I. Fish had his trap, which was a stubborn anchor trap, off at the end of Horsneck Road, he was the first to feel the result of these waterways being closed. In 1926 or 27, Johnson and Milt Schofield took over this trap, and they also met with very poor results. Later, Walter Crippen took over the trap, and he was actually licked right from the start because the fish going to the east and north in the spring, having to go around Gooseberry Neck, never did get back into the Horsneck side of the bay. As to the river itself, when the town of Westport stopped using arsenic or lead about 1953 and started using DDT to spray the trees around town, this was a sad end of our quahog industry as well as the scallops. And until the effects of this and other farm pesticides are gone, don't hope for much better.
Now, before this, in comparison, let's think, we won't go in the same sequence as we did before. How many, before the advent of DDT, barrels or bushels or quarts or gallons or whatever of scallops would you get in a day?
Well, not so much the scallop, because the scallops are something that's very seasonable. They're born one year and harvested the next. But quahogs, you could always rely on plenty of quahogs. Mm-hmm. In fact, Al Lees used to take in so many quahogs that he finally bought himself a grading machine.
Oh, really?
And within 2 or 3 years after he bought his grading machine, the DDT and the pesticides come along, and he had no further use.
No.
And that's how quick that the quahog industry declined.
Yes.
In the Westport River.
Yes. Right. That's amazing. What about, you were just talking about actually plumbing, modern plumbing, and toilets, and the difference between the effect of that as opposed to the old-fashioned Kirby and so on.
Right.
How much more pollution would you think would result in the waters of the river?
The waters of the river today are polluted from the detergents that's used, and more so than they are from the stools and the solids that come from your wastewater.
Mm-hmm.
Because for the simple reason, shellfish thrive on bacteria.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And with the old outhouses, as close as they were to the river,
yes,
it never hurt the shellfish.
It didn't?
It never did hurt the shellfish.
No.
But when they started using the hydrocarbon pesticides, that was the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And the detergents in your washing water.
Mm-hmm.
And there is, when you stop to figure, the millions of gallons of detergents.
Mm-hmm.
And that's washing into your rivers. I don't care only Westport River, which is the cleanest river in the state. Thank God for that. But I don't know how some of the rest must be, because we have the cleanest river in the state. When you figure all the detergents that's washing into the water, it's just an awful sad issue.
You said a little bit ago that it was cleaner now than it was a few years ago.
Because we have finally got Macon Park, for one thing that was helping to pollute it. That has finally straightened out their mess up there. And some of these other people on the river, we must give a whole lot of credit to one of the fellows that was on the Board of Health. I'll try to think of his name in a minute. Harry Morrison.
Mm-hmm.
When Harry Morrison was on the Board of Health, he went along the river, and I don't know how many, but I know he was over dozens of them, that he had made them change their septic tanks.
Yes.
Where before that, they had a actual runoff right into the river.
Oh, yes. Just drained right
and
in.
Harry Morrison done a wonderful job when he was on Board of Health.
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
In stopping that pollution.
Mm-hmm.
And
let's hear a little bit about the different kinds of fish that we catch here.
Well, years ago, we had plenty of squid, we had plenty of tautog, we had plenty of eels. Now, yes, there was old Frank Bessie had an eel fight down off of out the Manchester shore. And Joe Carrier used to take care of it for him. And it was nothing for him to go out and catch half, three quarters of a ton of eels every morning.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But of course, they could only set these fights certain times of the year, but the eels was there for the catch.
Yes. How much would they get? Did they sell them by the pound?
They sold them with a pound. In them days, if you could get 3 cents a pound for that many eels at a time, you were doing wonderful in the live eels.
Oh,
you had to dress them
what
out.
What do you get today?
Well, today, at Christmas time, eels are worth $1 a pound in a slime.
Oh, really?
$1.
You told Rufal about when you were a boy, or when you were about 10 years old, going to the grocery store for your mother, and sugar being
5 cents a pound.
And bread, and things like that.
Bread was very cheap. You never paid over 8 to 10 cents for a loaf of bread.
And milk?
Milk was 6 cents a quart, right? Yeah. If you was to get down to the river and dig yourself a peck of clams, if you could get $1 for that peck of clams, boy, you were a millionaire.
Really?
$1.95 per gallon of scallops.
Did you have chickens?
Oh, yeah.
Eggs? I wonder how much chickens and eggs were.
I don't remember that to be exact, but I think that the eggs was 15 cents a dozen.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what they got for me that time.
Yeah.
Because I was going to school, and between going to school and always being down around the town docks.
You were going to school where?
Not a Forsyth grad.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You graduated from there.
Did
you ever go to school in Westport?
No, I never did go to school in Westport.
When you came to Westport, you were too old to go to school.
Right. When I come to Westport, I was married and had two children.
Mm-hmm.
And I was fishing out of Westport long before I moved in here.
I see.
Right. Because,
and you not only are a fisherman, but you're a boat builder.
Right.
And a boat repair.
Right.
And I wanted to hear something about the big boats you've worked on
and the
small ones.
Yeah. So when I worked for Palmer Scott, we built four fishing draggers on Pope's Island in New Bedford. That was the three of us from Provincetown. The three of us were from Provincetown. Just because you want to think of the name for these boats, you can't.
Well, don't worry. It'll come to you later.
Yeah, they'll come to you, yeah. We built one for Gordon Lindbergh, Venture the First, and then there was the three of us, I'll think of those.
You'll think of them, yes, the yes, we'll go ahead.
But, we built the four boats on Polk Island. That was Oliver Bowen. He's working now for the city of New Bedford at Fort Rodman, teaching, training these fellas for the government contract down there.
Mm-hmm.
He was our boss. But I had worked on them. I think it was 364 foot was the biggest boat that I ever worked on. That was a coal barge out of New York. Had a leak on the 12-foot six water line. And that turned out to be the rudder port. The block in the rudder port had come out. And the captain was so mad because he had just come off the waves in New York having that rudder port fixed. And when they evidently did the job, they didn't lock the rudder port in place and it come out again. So he had to go back to New York to be hauled out again to take that rudder port.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, as far as crops, farmers' crops and so on, they sent them by boat by what kind of boat?
Old Joe Bowen, that was Sam Bowen's father,
mm-hmm.
sent his turnips from Hicks's Bridge by schooner to Providence.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose the other farmers around here did too. But I know that Sam Bowen told me about the times at the schooner. Between Sam Bowen and Cease Wind, they were very good old friends and good cronies.
Mm-hmm.
And they told about the schooners and the barges coming up to the Hicks's Bridge for the turnips. Yes, and well, if you think about it, the coal pockets used to be down in Adamsville. They had schooners bringing the coal into them down
mm-hmm.
in Adamsville.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's very interesting.
That's a long time ago.
Yes. Now, which fish, in spite of all of these hardships, which fish are you catching in the rivers now?
Well, in the summertime, you'll catch your bass and your bluefish, but they haven't been very plentiful this year. In the springtime, you generally start off with the herring, which have been very, very poor year this year.
Yes.
And why
do you think that was?
Well, I say it's because they're being caught by the offshore fishermen before they get a chance to get inshore to spawn.
That gets us into this 200-mile limit business,
right,
doesn't
right,
it?
Right, the 200-mile limit. That's something that we should have had long ago
mm-hmm.
to protect the American fishermen. We should have had that long ago. But, of course, we don't know what that's going to, side effect that's going to have on
our international relations.
International relations, right. Of course, everything they say is for progress one way or the other. But sometimes progress one way goes backward the other way.
Well, this is what I was thinking. I was reading in the paper about the people in Indonesia have gotten hold of a way of, you know, they used to take their rice, just the women worked in the rice fields all day long getting a little bit of rice. Now they've gotten a thrashing machine which gathers their rice, but what that's done is put all the people out of work.
Well, yes.
So they have all this unemployment
right,
now.
Right.
Whereas before, everybody got a little tiny bit.
Right, right.
So right. One problem leads to another.
Every time that you get a little bit of progress into one thing, you're throwing somebody else out of work in the other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Look at all of the people that's being thrown out of work today just through high-powered machinery.
Yes. Yes.
When they used to have 100 men digging it. 6-foot trench put in a water pipe. They got a machine that'll go along today and dig it more in a half a day than 100 men could have dug all day.
Yes. Yes. We have to do a lot of planning,
right.
I think. There's a great deal of planning and thinking needed. That's one thing I hope this bicentennial will be to bring to people's attention the need for a great deal of planning on in every aspect.
Well, I hope that when they do the planning that they don't let the state come in and take any more from the town like they're trying to do. You know, in this last 6 months they tried to take the islands and they wanted to take all the shores to environmental purposes. Why, the state made the biggest boo-boo it ever could have made when it put that boat ramp at Westport Point.
Hmm.
Any boat that wants to go from Westport Point out through the harbor has to go through what they call the Devil's Hole.
Mm.
Westport Harbor was always known as the Devil's Hole.
Mm.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
And had that been put over on Gooseberry Neck, on Green Hill on Gooseberry Neck, that would have been right out in the bay. And all these boats being launched wouldn't have had to go out through Westport Harbor.
No.
Which drowns two or three people every year.
Yes, I know. I have a good friend who used to, he has a great, you may know who he is, you may know him, Ed Yeomans.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he has to, he can't get his boat out of the river any longer over to harbor.
Okay.
He has to park over at Payton Inn.
Right. Because it's so in. You never can tell. When you go out in the morning, you don't know how much that's going to shoal in one day.
Really?
That's how fast that changes.
Mm-hmm.
It could dig itself out or it could shoal right in one day.
When you were young, what time in the morning did you used to get up to go fishing?
Generally, we was always starting at daylight. Right.
And how long would you work?
Well, the average day was, we never thought nothing of less than 14 or 15 hours for a day's work.
Really?
Always. It was 14 or 15 hours. If you went and got shellfish during the day, you had to cut it out at night.
And
some of those good scallop seasons, well, I'm going to tell you, you work quite